Well, welcome back, podcast listeners. We have a special guest here with us here in the studio today. She's a chiropractor who's been practicing for a number of years, and we'll get into details. Her name is Dr. Soka Laub.
We jumping right in, though. We're supposed to do our check-in first. We're supposed to reveal that later. But yeah, we already done spilled the beans, but so y'all know who's here and you know who I am. Did you even say who you were?
Not yet. I'm just trying to twist it up a little bit. Okay. It's the summer, and we haven't had much sun here. We've had a lot of rain, so our cookouts have been destroyed and our outings have. So let me shake it up a little bit, okay?
Well, I mean, it rains all work day. The sun shines all work day when you inside.
That's true.
It's just when you get ready to get out and do something. And
That's when,
because it's been hot. I've been outside during the day. It's been hot and sunny a lot. It's just storms in the afternoon.
Yeah. And on the weekends, though.
Weekends, huh? That don't mean nothing to me. Every day is the same. Every day is the same. Weekend, schmeekend. But I guess getting it seems like when I grew up, I remember it seemed like it rained every afternoon. Seems like, I know it's not true, but it seems like there was a thunderstorm every afternoon during the summer when I was growing up.
That's interesting. So, and when you said, for me, it may not have been the case. However, as a child, you felt that because a lot of times every moment of being outside matters. I could see that. Is that had something to do with it?
Well, no, it was the fact that I was in the tobacco field and I just knew that at some point in the middle of the afternoon, we were going to have some sort of outbreak and we were going to have to go up to the barn and wait it out.
Okay.
Usually it just passed through.
Passed through. Being in the tobacco field, were you hoping for this rain?
It felt good if it was not storming when we could get a little rain, it cooled you off.
Yes, that's what I was just
thinking. That was really the only time you could be in the rain with permission.
Correct. You know? Oh, yes. Okay, yes. Yeah. That took me back when you said that. I'm not sure if this is what you meant. I remember when, if it started raining and any sound of thunder, that was it. Everything was on lockdown at home for me.
Turn out the lights.
Turn out the lights. Turn off the water.
Pull down the shades.
Yes, no water.
No water. Unplug everything.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't even talk loud.
Couldn't even talk loud. We had to be quiet.
I wish you could see Silka's eyebrows. Her, the raisin. Yeah, so
why?
Why? Well, I think one it was a part of it was a religious thing, and in my family was just like the storm was sort of like it had this sort of mystical or religious significance to it, and we were supposed to be sit quietly in reference to it.
But why turning the water out?
Well, what was it for your family?
Well, get out of the water. Like, get away from, like, don't be in contact with water. That was purely safety.
Yeah, that was safety.
You
go
to the house and turn all the water off.
Yeah, there. No. Not from, like, you know, not from the actual control. Not the actual control.
No, it's just like, bath, no, like.
No, exactly.
Don't get wet. Don't be washing the dishes.
No showers. No nothing like
everything
that.
Everything had to wait until the storm passed. Right.
That was full safety.
Still the lightning does not hit you in the shower inside a house.
Right. Well, but I'm telling you, that was the old way of thinking. Yes.
I'm just telling you how it was. It was part precaution, part superstition.
Yes.
There's a lot with that.
Yes, it is a lot with that.
So summertime is just, we kind of right in the thick of it now. And I think as we talk about, we can make our wellness check-in sort of around the significance in summer, and I guess every season tends to have a different focus in terms of like what's going on in your life and the levels of stress. And a lot of times people look forward to summer as a time to recharge or to go on vacation and to do something that's out of the routine, like Karen coming in here trying to freestyle the intro, trying to break the routine. That's some of what people do in the summer. But my summers, my summer so far has been interesting in terms of like the level of stress and the level of work and the things that are going on. So how's it been for you in terms of how is summer different for you than other times of the year? How does that tie into your wellness practices and things like that? Are there different things you do in the summertime? Or is it things that you try to include that perhaps is uniquely for summer?
Well, for me, what's unique about summertime and wellness is more engaging with relationships, you know, so I get to visit more. We do more outdoor activities normally,
okay,
and more partying, you know, having, you know,
well,
parties, actually. Yeah, gatherings and stuff. In the winter, people, first of all, it gets dark early.
Well, you know what, though?
You know what I mean? And that makes a big difference. And so everybody shuts down around 6. You know, you get home, you go to work, and you come home and you shut down. Socialization, engagement with outside activities, going to plays and music, you know, music outings. That doesn't happen as much in the winter. I mean, they can happen, but it doesn't happen as much as it does in.
Well, from a relationship standpoint, if you're not in a relationship, summer is not the time that you typically get in a relationship. I think, you know, this is, I don't know. There's this thing called cuffing season.
Okay.
Cuffing season is in the fall and into the winter. You want to get cuffed up because, like you said, you're not going nowhere. You want to be in. You're going to be in. There's nothing. So you want somebody to chill with. But that's around September, October, you start taking applications for cuffing season.
Okay. You start in August with that.
You start in August. You start with, as soon as that last vacation comes in, you done showed off your beach body, right?
Then you go line them up.
Yeah, you start.
You have to get it settled by fall.
That's right.
Yeah, you just taking applications and then it's just like college. You know what I'm saying? It's just like college. Summer's over, okay, you got to enroll. And then you got to make some decisions. All these, like, key points, like, okay, here comes the holidays. Where are we at in this relationship? Are we, you meet my family for the holidays, or are we just chilling, right? That's a milestone. You cuffed up. How serious are you, right?
And it's true. Especially around Christmas, the gifts. So.
And then February rolls around, it's time to break up. You got to break up, put up or break up, you dig? Valentine's comes now, okay, so.
Break up before.
You got to make some decision. You got to make a decision. Because it's like, at that point, it's like, what, you know, the questions is going to, like, what are we? What are we doing here?
Yeah,
so all of these different kind of touch points kind of fall into seasons because you are making decisions about going deeper into a relationship or staying out. It's hard to, most people can't abide with ambiguity in the relationship for a very long time.
I don't think ambiguity and relationships go together too well. I mean,
well, I'm just saying, you can have, I think with summertime, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are just kind of more casual. You're just, you know, you're out meeting people, doing things, having fun.
Wait a minute, you get to see skin.
Right.
You get to see tight bodies, like you said. Come on.
Right. That's why you want to keep it cool. Right. Because if it's too serious, then you don't feel. Yeah. Right. You know,
you get to spread your wings.
This is all for anyone who's single. If you're already in a committed relationship, you just kind of have to ride all through the seasons. There's nothing different. You just kind of ride it through. Ain't no cuffing season. You already cuffed up all year round.
All year round. That's mm-hmm. right. That's right.
But yeah, that's what's out there in the world. I'm curious about the demographic breakdown in terms of how many people who are listening are single in relationships or a little bit of both.
Ready for cuffing season.
Yeah, so right now it's coming up soon. Cuffing season's coming up soon, y'all.
I love that word.
I know, so do I.
It's going to come around before you know it. So it's already July. You know, somebody chase. Yeah, you gotta start thinking about it ahead. So you got to be like the squirrel, you know? you got to store up for the winter, you know? You can't wait till the last minute.
Are you now collecting phone numbers?
You got to start collecting phone numbers and start asking those serious questions. Summer. So for a lot of people, summer is like that because it's a little bit of a change of pace. Summer's always been about hard work for me. Like summer is a really intensive time for me in terms of working. It's always worked out that way. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, it was working, you know, on the farm. When I went into, I never had, when I was in the Army, I don't think I ever had leave during the summer.
That's interesting.
It just never worked out that way.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to get it to work out that way?
Well, I think because of the time that I came in, I was always going between, I was transitioning from one duty station to another in like May, June, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And you can't get there and say, hey, I know I just got here, but let me go ahead and get 2 weeks off.
Right.
So, I mean, so it always worked out that, and it was fine because I usually took it around the holidays. But summer's always been about work for me. Mm-hmm. And it's like that right now. It's a really busy time. But, you know, my time is coming.
There you go.
My time is coming. and I wonder if the fact that I'm working like this, maybe that has an impact on my like the quality of my relationships. I'm not putting that time in the early part. So when cuffing season come around, I'm low down on the list, or I'm way behind, you know.
Don't have your numbers.
Didn't collect enough numbers.
Right. I didn't run those numbers. I didn't put that time in.
There's Tinder.
There you go. You can always swipe.
You know what? I did try Tinder a couple years ago.
Oh yeah.
It was all right.
It was all right.
It's very skewed in favor of women.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what? The owner who started it actually is a female who wanted it to be in
It was just going to be that way anyway, because dudes are thirsty. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going like, okay, you know. I think that in typically, I don't want to make this generalization. Mm-hmm. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But I think that women tend to be more discriminating in that context if there aren't any other sort of social imperatives around. Like, if it's just you by yourself and nobody's looking and nobody's going to judge the way that you are engaging with the situation. Nah. But a dude would be like, it's the opposite for, I think that women's standards get tighter in a vacuum and men's standards get looser in a vacuum. And I think that's the dynamic that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because a lot of times, you know, when you are looking in, looking in that direction, I think that there's a lot to, hey, we in Baltimore, y'all hear those horns honking? there's a lot to, people make decisions sometimes based on how it looks to other people. Like a lot of people like get together, like they're worried about how other people feel about the person that they're with, or how other people judge the, like, oh, you know, why are you with him? Yeah. Like, what's his deal? Like, you could do better, or, wow, why is she with you? She could do so much better,
right,
you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there is that thing where relationships can be performative rather than just a connection with the two people. It's like a show that's being put on for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's something that you kind of have to like mature past. But I think a lot of early relationships are very much about status and performance for others and not about the connection that you have with another person.
Yeah, when you talk about male and, or when you're talking about more intimate relationships, I think you might be right. But when you're talking more on the larger scheme of relationships, that is a part of the relationship, is getting the approval, getting accepted, getting the, who's that? That's part of that whole dynamics of establishing that relationship for that person. So we sometimes have different foundation points that stimulate what makes our relationship.
Okay, here's a real slick segue. Mm-hmm. You talk about foundation points and stimulation. I think it's a good time to introduce our guest.
Yes.
We're going to be talking about some points and some stimulation. We have Dr. Silke Laub here with us today, a chiropractor specializing in. Well, why don't you share a few of the specialties that you have?
Oh, well, I carry a lot of specialization. So I do women's health, pregnancy especially, and postpartum pediatrics, especially infants and kids with ADHD and autism. And then I'm also a sports chiropractor. I'm a disc specialist. I'm the only one in the Baltimore area who actually does this technique. It's called Cox technique. It's a research proven from NIH grant funded research.
Very nice.
To really help prevent people having surgery.
Okay.
That's wonderful.
So, which is really nice. And I've noted it also helps not only disc patients, also a lot of people just with general neck and back pain. Or I had now just a recent patient with 10 out of 10 pain of chemotherapy treatments. They make you being very painful in the hands and feet. She said, it feels like I'm stepping and walking on glass all day. Mm-hmm. And I had no science behind this. I just said, well, let's just try this. And her pain is down after just 5 treatments to 2 out of 10.
And this is NIH.
That COG technique, mm-hmm. which has only researched on the disc problems, mm-hmm. and you know where you get the pain shooting into your legs and mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. Not really better, but I thought, well, still so-called neuropathic pain. It's nerve, so correct. When it helps one nerve, maybe it helps the other nerves correct. Too. So mm-hmm. I mean, it was just trying, you know. And I told the patient, let's just try it.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, nothing happens. That it's a type of pain where you basically think of suicide. Because mm-hmm. Nothing helps. All the medications, nothing has helped.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Very good.
I cannot even imagine living in this. So.
Yeah, that is a very poor experience of life to wake up to every day.
Yeah,
most definitely.
She said the moment she puts her foot out of the bed, it's mm-hmm. like walking on glass.
Glass. Okay, very
Sounds
good.
Sounds very painful to me.
Well, talking with you, getting to know a little bit more about your approach in your office and what makes you unique as a chiropractor.
Again, I think my why I am unique is because I really take time for my patient. I really try to, in the initial exam, it's not only just going through the motion, having that quick questionnaire like, what is your pain number? It's more like, what is your story? I think this is how already it starts. So my initial intake is like 90 minutes. It can be 2 hours. I really never really know. If it's like a more complex patient, like a patient who has pain for 10, 15 years, there's so many factors what plays in. Mm-hmm. And my philosophy is the more information I have about the patient, how this could have started, the higher my chances are to actually figure out what was the actual source, when did it start, and where are the pieces which added up to make things worse, and that you are now for years in a chronic pain state. And then trying to kind of peel the onion back out and figure out, let's do this, let's try this. And then which is the best tool in my tool bag to use in order to help you the fastest. Or sometimes the fast track is not the best one, or let's pick this one, it might take longer, but we probably really figure it out. And therefore my treatment also always changes. It's not like you come in 10 times and it's always the same thing. It's if there's no improvement, I switch direction immediately instead of waiting for the big re-evaluation. So I do a mini eval every visit. That's why a visit is 30 minutes just with me and the patient versus some assistant, and you get 5 minutes with the chiropractor. That really trying to get the patient better fast, mm-hmm. best, most prolonging, most optimal. I mean, that's my goal.
right. So you mentioned you try to get the story, the patient's mm-hmm. story mm-hmm. In the beginning. So we're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to come back and kind of get your story mm-hmm. of how you ended up doing the work that you're doing now. And I know y'all are excited to hear about Dr. Laub's story and the journey that has brought her here and all the results and experiences that she's had. And hopefully you'll get a chance to learn a few things that might improve the quality of your life in the process. Sound good? That sound good to y'all?
Sounds good to me.
All right. We'll be right back, y'all.
So Dr. Laub, yes, question I want to sort of get a little bit deeper understanding about. You said your initial intake, it's about 90 minutes, and you do a lot of research into how this person got here. You talk about their story. Tell us your story.
Because I hear you have an accent. You're from, is that Alabama or Mississippi? Is that,
is that Australia. The accent? No, I'm from Germany originally.
Okay.
Thank you for being nice.
Okay. Yeah, I heard a little twang in there. Okay, so Germany. All right.
North Germany, right from the coast. Used to be a lot of rain. Now with the non-existent climate change, we have really hot summers by now.
It's so hot over there this year.
Oh, it is.
Record-breaking
it's,
heat.
It's always, 90s, 100.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, they have droughts. We have you lived in Germany. You have never heard about a wildfire in Germany.
It wasn't hot. It wasn't like that.
Yeah, and you have never heard about a wildfire, especially in North Germany. So now we have wildfires.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We have weird bugs, which are usually home to Southern Europe.
So, yeah, my daughter's still over there, and she's like, it's so hot over here.
Though. Right. So we start to have air conditions.
Yeah, you're right. When I was there,
we didn't need them.
Yeah, we had a window, like a little small window unit, but not the whole thing.
Oh, we haven't had any because you just open up the window, especially growing up the coast. I mean,
yeah,
you open the windows, you get the breeze in. And you got to
sleep with the windows open.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
We always sleep with the windows open.
Yeah, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Even in the wintertime, windows open. Blankets on.
I would love that, actually.
You have to have that fresh mm-hmm. Luft.
Yeah, frische Luft.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what you need, fresh air.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I grew up in North Germany. Actually, I was, when I was in high school, I was either way, I wanted to be I kind of considered medical school, but it was not on the top of my priority. I wanted to be a chemist or a musician. So I play the string bass. And I always said, if I make it through the auditions, I'm going to become a musician. And if not, I go for chemistry, which is kind of far apart. But that's okay. So, of course, I made it an audition. So I started studying music, played professionally for like 10 years about. And then, but when I was, I started playing professionally before I graduated high school. So, I was 27. I always said, if I'm not making enough money to make a living, and I kind of quit. So I called it a quit.
So you were playing, like, in what type of music or what context
classical.
Were you playing?
Yeah, so I had a lot of sub work to do in multiple orchestras, like in Hamburg and Bremen, around the area where I was living, like in the 3-hour radius. I had played in orchestras which were traveling. So, I mean, I made kind of a living, but I did not like the inconsistency of income.
Right. Yeah, and string bass isn't necessarily somewhere you can just take into a coffee shop and...
you can, but not me.
Take in a coffee shop and just sing and put out a hat. It's kind of
a friend of mine is doing it. He's a jazz bass player, and he plays on the street in Europe and has an RV and is still traveling around and just finds jam sessions to join.
Okay.
I'm not a jazz player, so I can't do that.
Yeah, right.
For me, it wasn't an option.
Right, yeah, because it's harder to do a solo string bass situation in that context, I would think.
Yeah.
In class, like,
it's not that attractive.
Yeah, I love bass, but you know, solo bass is hard.
Well, that was good.
Oh, I know you were nice. I know you. Hey, you know.
My diploma concert was an hour playing just solo concerts. So.
I bet that was compelling. I bet everybody loved that. People have to know how to listen to bass.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like,
yeah, and bass it's really not quite as easy to listen to.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, you have
I'm
to.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, I know. People, you have to. It takes a level of understanding.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have to understand.
Yeah,
it takes
that's
a level
true.
Of understanding to just be able to understand what's going on with
right,
the bass.
Right, to appreciate it in the singular aspect. Yeah, I can see that, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So from then deciding to quit music, I wanted to go to medical school then at that point in Germany, but then there was this government-funded program to become an X-ray tech where you get a full salary for getting this job, and I thought, well, in that way, I'm not on my parents' pocket longer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I kind of felt guilty to push him another 10 years to school. I mean, there's no tuition fees in Germany, but still housing and stuff. So I took that off and became an X-ray tech. It's different than here. It's a 3-year program. You're X-ray, radiation oncology, so multitude of facets in the hospital. Everything what has to do with radiation. And that's where I met my husband. And then my husband got a postdoc research fellow thing in Michigan. So he went for 6 months and then they kept him there. So mm-hmm. that's how I ended up in the States. And we lived in Michigan for a tiny bit, just a year. And then we moved to Portland, Oregon, where I had my kids, worked in X-ray radiation therapy. And then I decided I wanted to go back to med school. And then in pre-med, someone actually told me about chiropractic, and I thought, it might be more me than just going for, you know, prescribed.
Well, what makes you say that?
So it's the time factor with the patient. Because, I mean, we all know that MDs are not really spending much time with you because it's not getting paid for. I mean, that's why most chiropractors don't spend the time because it's not paid for. Mm-hmm. It comes always back to finances. But I really wanted to, I was more intrigued really by the chiropractor. I love bones, I love muscles, and I was intrigued by really that we are trying to find what is the cause of the problem? Mm-hmm. Is it how you walk? Is it your feet? What causes the problem in your musculoskeletal system?
Yeah, listening to your background and the diversification you had from, you know, music, classical, mm-hmm. and feeling, you're a feeling person.
Mm-hmm. I'm a feely, touchy person.
Yes, so that's I could see that as being a nice transition and from what you were doing to being in the medical field.
Yeah, I think that just suited me better from the profession itself.
Yes, I could see that. Yeah. Go ahead.
That hands on. Yeah, and that's how I ended up being a chiropractor and was first working with someone. I mean, independent, but in a clinic with someone who showed me a couple of things, what I want to do and don't want to do. And then I worked out of a birthing center for a little bit, which was a lot of fun. And then I decided to be completely on my own back in Oregon. And a year and a half ago, we moved to Baltimore and I opened my own shop here again and started all over.
Now, can you transition us to how you start to open your patients up to find out their story?
I mean, it's actually pretty easy for them to open up to their pain story, okay. Because usually there was some initial incident, it's always like I happened in a car accident years ago, or if it's a fresh injury, I slept wrong. I mean, we hear this all the time, mm-hmm. I slept wrong. But the one time sleeping wrong, of course, is not, I mean, that kicked the problem overboard, mm-hmm. right? So you couldn't mask it up anymore. But why does a night's sleep kick your neck out and you cannot move to the right? Mm-hmm. See, that's back to the problem. So, I mean, that's the easy story, but the chronic pain patient always has a longer story. There's a lot of problems. Of course, nobody opens up to their emotional needs right away, right? Mm-hmm. That happens over time, and often I know kind of trigger words, what probably could have happened, mm-hmm. or some people simply forget. And then over time, when I'm in the conversation also doing the 30-minute visits, is that they don't even notice that they're actually telling me another piece of the puzzle, but they are saying, oh yeah, when I was 18, I had a skiing accident. I said, you didn't mention that, because mm-hmm. people forget, yes. often forget. And sometimes yes. it's subtle things. Mm-hmm. I have been a marathon runner. Oh, you should have disclosed that.
Right.
I have people forgetting to tell me about their surgeries.
Yes.
Well, they think the surgery is irrelevant. Like more an internal organ surgery, a small surgery, but they have this pain on the back. And I said, even a small cut on the front changes all your structure internally and can cause a pain on the back. So everything can be important. And this is in the initial visit, I stressed a lot. I said, every little bit can be important. Why is my surgery? It doesn't matter. I said, tell me what it was. And then let me decide if it is important or not.
It sounds like you do an integrative approach towards your treat. You're actually telling the story, getting to know your patient initially in a subjective way. So what I'm hearing is that you look at all dimensions.
Trying to.
Yes. Okay. Very good.
I think one of the things that jumped out as you were describing this process, I guess people are coming to you. If someone is coming to you, then something has popped up and they might not have a good, idea of exactly where it's coming from. They just are noticing the symptoms. Mm-hmm. But it was bad enough for them to come to you. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, how much awareness people walk around with to what's going on with themselves. Like, how well people are in tune with what's going on with their bodies.
A lot of people have no idea.
People are just live with a low-grade discomfort this is just how it's supposed to be.
Like, a lot of people do.
Yeah. What does it feel like to even be well? Like, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about after people begin and they start to see improvements, what are some of the things ongoing that help keep them in sort of a state of wellness that you notice?
I mean, again, it depends really on the personality of the patient. So I start treating him, and it's always kind of a multi-step process. First, of course, it's the symptom-based. A patient comes usually to me with pain. Or if it's ADHD or autism, of course, more with a different set of complaints, right? But you come in with a complaint and first it's trying to resolve the symptom. I mean, ADHD, autism works a little bit different way because it's complete different type of approach. It's a lot of exercise involved to help these kids.
And what are you helping them with? What differentiates?
It's a certain tool I'm using. It's called primitive reflex integration. So I'm testing the primitive reflexes, which is baby reflexes. Mm-hmm. And if you're 3 years old, you shouldn't have any. So if you still have some, and it's about like if you didn't crawl, then I have to make this kid crawl somehow. So it's a theory that the primitive reflexes need to disappear in a certain order and time. And if they don't, something got skipped in the developmental process. And trying to reintegrate them, the symptoms sometimes disappear. And then with the adjustments, I just help basically the alignment and also putting the input always onto if the right brain is decreased in activity. I give all my input that it stimulates the weakened brain side. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit different there. But if someone comes in with a pain complaint, it's taking care of the pain while I'm also at the same time trying to figure out the problem, and it's initiating exercise. Sometimes it's a nutritional component in it. There's a lot of inflammation, arthritis. You can help this a lot with nutritional change of diet or supplements. Again, depending on does a patient is willing to change diet or are they willing to invest in supplements. But I try to give my patients as quickly as possible tools they can do to change their own things. And sometimes it's very simple, like standing on one leg and while you brush your teeth. It could be as simple as that. You know, I always try to get all the exercises. It's not really exercise. It's really like little things which don't take more than a minute a day. Mm-hmm. You can do to help yourself. So then we try to work on the structural changes and then on the wellness. And then on the wellness, I say you can continue doing the things I was telling you. And if you don't, then you're probably going to see me more often and I do it for you. I mean, these are the two things. And in an acute patient, I often only need between 4 and 8 visits. Because I spend the time. I don't need 12, 20, 30, 40. And that's back to the differentiation. Because I spend the time with the patient with stretching, massage therapy, whatever is needed, whatever electrotherapies, whatever it takes, whatever it needs, and exercises to get the patient well as quickly as possible and giving him the tools to hopefully sustain that. So most of my patients I don't see when they are done. I don't see for months, which is good. I mean, it's good for them.
Right. It changes their quality of life. Right. Yeah. It's all about quality.
I'm always happy if I don't see them again.
Yes.
Except for a nice hello.
Can we circle back around to the children, more or less? I'm assuming it's with the
ADHD and autism.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And autism. What are some of the outcomes you're looking for to resolve or to address in order to now send them off on their way for more of a quality aspect of life? Mm-hmm. What are some of the outcomes?
I mean, I had one, it's always best to work with an example. So I had one autistic child, he was 2, nonverbal at the point when I start working with him, but he was very young. So that's why the younger kids are much faster. Mm-hmm. So, and he had a lot of the reflexes were positive. So I started working with him, also did craniosacral therapy, which is a very gentle technique, also really calming. And
can you describe what that entails?
The craniosacral?
Yeah.
It's really a lot of gentle pressure on your tailbone mostly and on your head and different skull bones, it sounds always kind of weird to explain it verbally, right. But you're trying to make subtle changes in like pressure models. So, I mean, it's a hydrostatic model, but it's too complicated. So,
right.
But in my opinion, it really works a lot on the sympathetic, so on the relaxation nervous system. So in that way, with these combinations, after 3 months, he was verbal. Initially, I couldn't touch his head. And then slowly over time, he gained more and more trust. So initial treatments were probably 5 minutes because I just couldn't get to him. But over time and after 3 months, he was almost back to normal, which was really, really cool. I mean, he was talking again. you know, communicating a little bit too. I mean, at that, I saw him longer than when he was four, got really hooked into computer games. He couldn't get away from Minecraft. But so he had still a little touch of ADHD left. I mean, I saw him for over 2 years because the mom just continued coming back because he also wanted it. I mean, when after the 3 months kind of were over and he was almost back to normal, he, when he came in, he just jumped on my table and actually told me what he wants me to do. So it's kind of cute. 2.5-year-olds jump on your table and say, can you do this?
And how do you measure the, how do you measure that specific outcome?
That is really parents.
Mm-hmm. Parents mean, give you the feedback.
Feedback and that, say that if it's helping. I always mm-hmm. recommend to parents to put a few things on a list what bothers them most mm-hmm. in the behavior of their child. Mm-hmm. Same with ADHD for that girl. I was treating very successfully. It was, she woke up so many times at night and she was in preschool. They said she bounces up and down all day. Mm-hmm. So we made the sleeping and the teacher's report. And I mean, and again, I have my primitive reflexes. Do they disappear? Because I want them to disappear.
Yes.
So that's my objective part. Very and then, good. Of course, the mm-hmm. subjective is, and I usually recommend to make a list of at least 3-4 things. Will you either way put a number on or something so that you can see some success.
Excellent.
Right now I'm treating a severe autistic teenager. It's the first time I'm treating a teenager. And I found an kind of an autism questionnaire. Mm-hmm. So I had to fill this one out because I think on a teenager, it's going to take much longer mm-hmm. than on a preschooler because the brain is already more mature. Mm-hmm. So, but that we can see like, and I gave her, I said, let's check back after 12 treatments mm-hmm. and you do the exercises. And then let's check back like in 12 weeks. That's basically for her, it's going to be like after a month. And see if we fill out the questionnaire again and see, because the mom might not, again, so severe that the mom might not notice subtle changes and see if we have any improvement.
Yes.
If I don't have any improvement, then I will tell this mom, I don't know, do you want to try another 12 or should we, because I have nothing to really relate in this age group out of clinical experience. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that neuroplasticity has an impact on the
outcomes?
Oh,
that's all neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. all neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so most of the adolescents you've been working with have been under the age of 12, you would say?
Oh, so far in Oregon, it was under the age of 5.
Okay.
So really, really young kids. So basically all preschool, kindergarten.
Okay.
So I have nothing to clinic. And I told the family that they heard that I'm working on this. And I said, I have never worked on a teenager. I said, I have no, it could be 24 times. It could be 3 months. It could be 6 months.
Yes.
I have no idea. And it's up to her. And I said, but I think that the exercises are actually the more important part than the adjustments. I would still say, let's do at least one adjustment a week mm-hmm. in order to help that neuroplasticity and that right brain. Mm-hmm. But I think the exercises is more critical in this.
Right.
And it also depends on finances and, you know, these, they can't afford it. And but that's why we have a conversation after 12 visits and let's 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that, and see what we get. But it's summertime. It's not so consistent in the treatment.
Right. It's summertime, baby. Y'all know what it is.
Well, people Everybody have a harder time to get into the office,
yes,
you know?
I'm telling you, it's social.
Social time.
Well, maybe like me and they just working.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm jambling and rambling. If I started talking about cases, I cannot stop.
No,
we love to hear the passion that you have.
Like I said, y'all out here playing. I'm out here working. My phone was blowing up the whole time. I'm trying to, I can't talk now.
No, I'm talking.
Okay. I have a question. So I think a lot of the challenges that people are coming in for help with are things that a lot of other people seek some sort of pharmaceutical intervention for.
Yes. Or,
so say a little bit about how patients find you or how people find you or becoming aware, because I had no idea that of these types of interventions for ADHD and some of these challenges that you were talking about. Only thing I heard about is, hey, yo, give him this thing right here and, you know, and go over there and sit down somewhere, sit down and rock in that chair and take this pill, you know? So how aware, how is the level of awareness for the types of services that you offer for these things?
Yeah, you can Google it if you really start researching. A chiropractic might help. And I'm just thinking about this. How do I got there? I mean, I think it was all kind of word of mouth that I just talked to someone that I'm doing this. Was like someone told me, oh, my kid has ADHD. I said, well, let me evaluate and see. You know, it's more like really soccer game conversations. I mean,
as a therapist,
the soccer mom conversation.
Yeah, because I wasn't aware until of actually hearing it from your pre-interview that you did actually was part of your specialization, and I thought it was really neat, and I wanted to learn myself more about that because I did not hear about that even in my line of work.
You know about Karen?
Yeah.
Not really, actually.
Oh, okay. No, I'm an occupational therapist, so.
Oh, yes. Yes. So I would love to work more closer with occupational therapy. I worked on a cerebral palsy kit with an occupational therapist, and we had really good success together.
Okay, we could talk. But, being in my line of work, not really ever hearing about a chiropractor actually using those, it's a new study, correct? Am I correct?
I mean, this primitive reflex things, it's actually, where's it coming from? Is it from Murillo or is it more from this other guy from Philadelphia? I don't know. I don't know where it's coming from. To send patients the exercises. I have a Danish chiropractor who's did really good videos about it. So I'm actually not sure where it was coming from. It was in my pediatric training. I never pay attention to where things are coming from.
Right.
There were two instructors who worked on this way, one with primitive reflexes and one with adjusting into certain directions. One is Dr. Rubin and one is Dr. Hall, and they just taught me that, and they have good success. That's all they work with work on. So that's how it all started.
Yeah, and now that in our culture we're trying to move away from intervention from a pharmaceutical, and parents really hate putting kids on medication so far as to address that deficit.
At least not jumping straight to it.
A lot of times you have that, and you got some more severe cases where they just feel like that's the only option.
And sometimes it might sense to try them to do the medication, but do the other work as well.
Correct.
And then we can, if it's too bad, I mean, also with intense pain patients, like someone comes in with a sore back out and is basically not working. I said, take the ibuprofen 800 or get a nice pain shot at the urgent care.
Right.
Yes.
Because then I can work better too. I can work better too if a person is not in unbearable pain because I have to work I'm more than happy to if someone doesn't want it, and I can. But I mean, I don't want to be a day in this pain. I admire the people who say, no, I don't want anything. Just start working. I mean, I come in twice on one day.
Right. They come in and they're screaming and hollering.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I would take the prescription medication in that case for the one day at least until a chiropractor can work it out a little bit.
Right. So you're not like militant, like, no drugs.
No,
right.
No, I really think I work also with the GBMC integrated medicine. I really think it should be always a total approach because we can always tone things back down if something is very acute. My work is not necessary. I mean, yeah, sometimes a patient comes in with a 10 out of 10 pain and walks out with a 5 out of 10. That's great. But if that's not the case, why not giving a little bit of relief? Because if you sleep better, you heal better. If your movement actually often is good for healing, but if you cannot move because of pain, then you're in a vicious cycle. So no, I'm a chiropractor who actually admits I'm also for pain medications or something if needed, but not chronic and not all the time. But in the beginning, in a very acute state, I want it.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. You got to get that. Sometimes you got to get that drip.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure if chiropractors listens to this, they're like, how can you say this? I work very integrated. I love to work with physical therapists. Yes. It's really about the patient.
It's all about
the patient. What gets them out of whatever it is the fastest. And the best way.
That's what we like to hear. And we like to hear that for the community's well-being. Because we are beings of different dimensions and we have different needs, and different approaches need to be integrated at once.
And if one doesn't work, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just means that that particular, like I have patients coming in, it doesn't work. I send them to someone else. And sometimes it's a different chiropractor who's using different type of chiropractic.
Mm-hmm. Different tools, like you spoke
different,
about.
Different yeah. tool bag. Yes. And I said, if one chiropractor didn't work for you, it doesn't mean chiropractic doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, and right? that's correct. That's correct.
Just try about- a different one and I can guide you to the right one.
And that's what we were talking earlier when we were talking about relationships and what works and what combination of experiences are needed to even guide us through that process of engaging into deeper relationships, as Jared was talking about.
Guiding into deep relationship and cuffing
that's
season.
What, that's what we all want.
That's right.
Guide me into a deeper relationship.
So yeah, so a lot of times it requires different pieces to that puzzle, mm-hmm. as you said, Dr. Lobb, to make it all fit and work.
And it's not about me or you're an occupational
exactly.
therapist. It's not about
it's
you.
Not about
it's
me.
Really about getting that patient mm-hmm. to where they want to be. Mm-hmm. It's not even where I want them to be. Although
exactly.
sometimes I'm thinking.
Sometimes we're like, this picture looks a little bit. You sure you don't want this picture?
Let's try this one.
Yeah, I mean, if
it's
you
about
got,
where they want to be.
That's right. right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right?
Yeah.
I heard you, Karen. I heard you like go through that name real quick. I think you said it right, but you didn't say it with a lot of confidence. But you, when you said Dr. Lobb, you cut it off like you weren't confident in saying it.
You want me to say it again?
Say it again with confidence.
Oh, my name?
Yeah.
Okay. He loves to pick on me.
That's why
you introduced me before the conversation.
Right, right.
So I didn't want to forget my pronunciation.
Yeah, Dr. Lobb.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
Mm-hmm. Thank
close.
You.
Close.
She says she's good. It's her name. She's good.
She's
thank you.
She's been generous.
Thank you.
I think one of the things that really stands out for me is, and everyone is listening, is just really trying to enhance our awareness of how we are, because we talked about switching up the routine and doing things differently. A lot of times we just get kind of caught up in however we're feeling, whatever we're dealing with, unless it's acute. Mm-hmm. And like we can just gradually acclimate ourselves to discomfort and pain and it normalizes and it's just like something that we live with constantly. And we don't have awareness of it anymore because we've just adjusted to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's really important to take some time and really get a sense of how things are going, how you're really feeling, and really believing that it can get better, you know, that you don't always have to suffer. Maybe even if you don't think suffering is too strong of a word, just having to endure all of these things that just keep getting worse as time goes by if you don't attend to them.
Mm-hmm.
So my hope for everyone is that just check in with yourself, and if something ain't quite right, it you know, maybe you don't have to just
it doesn't
deal
have to
with
be
it.
That
it doesn't
way.
Have to be that way.
Mm-hmm. You know? It might not take 50 visits.
And
or,
it might be just a little.
Right.
It might be just a little thing that you just having that one little thing fixed just makes your whole world open up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
give potentially.
You that quality. Yep.
Yeah, it can all open up for you. Breathe.
How you say? Get your groove back in.
Yeah, you got to be like Stella.
Yes.
Get that groove back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, that's my little rant. That's what I was thinking about as I just envision going through this process of. I think even just going through a process, a process where someone asks you all these questions and makes you. Brings to mind all these different things that happen with you so that you can get some sort of clarity about what's going on with your body is valuable in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, people don't even remember, oh yeah, I did have that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I do. Oh yeah, this is just, it's always been like that.
Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. There's mm-hmm. always been like
no,
that.
It hasn't. Mm-hmm. No, not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
That's right.
And I think one big message for me is also that if one of the listeners is seeing someone and or saw someone and it didn't work, it could be chiropractic, massage therapy, physical therapy, occupational.
That's right.
It doesn't matter which, and they say it didn't work. It doesn't mean it didn't work. It only means that therapist probably didn't work. So it's worth looking someone else, not giving up. Like if you have this constant ache, it doesn't, like you just said, Derek, it's not, it doesn't have to be that way. You just need to look for the different, a different type of care, which might help you.
And well said. And that's the point of why we have the wellnessconnection.health. It is actually to stimulate and motivate you to find out what really is your case mix, what works for you. We service and provide and expose everyone to different treatment approaches, different tools that are out there to find your wellness. Mm-hmm. And as you said earlier, it's not a cookie cutter situation. It's unique. It's all unique.
Yep. So we're all unique.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I know what happened. Do you have a couple closing questions, or you feel?
Yeah, I think you did a wonderful job sort of giving us a conclusion of what your goal is, what your passion is. I heard it throughout the whole conversation that normally at the end, I normally ask, so what's your goal for your vision, for what you're doing for the community? And you shared it. You want
people who just get better.
Yes, yes.
And be happy.
And be happy. And I loved it. And she shared it with a natural passion. So we really appreciate you coming here on the Wellness Connection.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure. It was fun.
All right. So, okay. So right here, Karen got her computer. So I'm just going to paste in the outro.
You see what I'm saying?
So the outro that you're about to hear, Karen didn't do that today. I'm putting you out. So you're going to hear the outro from probably 2 weeks ago. She's going to hear it. If her voice is different, that's because she didn't record it right now.
He's terrible.
But we'll see y'all in a couple weeks. Enjoy your summer.
All right.
Get ready for that cuffing season. Start getting those
Send
numbers.
Send your numbers out.
You know, we'd like to know how we can get in contact with her.
Oh yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
How can people find you and learn more about what you do?
I'm located. It's already Baltimore County, but it's still Baltimore City, so it's on North Charles Street. It's Roland Park Chiropractic, and you can find me on www.rolandparkchiropractic.com. Probably the easiest way. Mm-hmm. And if you have questions, there's a messaging tab. You can just ask questions if you want to, or call. There's a number on the website. If you have more questions, just reach out. More than happy to answer.
Very good. And you'll also be able to find her located in our resource partnership section on the website, wellnessconnection.health.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Great project you're having here.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good one.
Thank you, podcast listeners. I'm hoping this episode will be a meaningful tool and resource for you. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating and review. A review actually helps other people find the show. You can also connect with us at thewellnessconnection.health, where you can design your wellness journey using tools and resources that enable, promote, facilitate an ultimate meaningful health and wellness journey for you. My name is Karen Bell, and we have with us
Jared Forte
with the Health Wellness Connection. On the Wellness Connection, remember, it's our aim to bring quality living to everyday life.